Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. So I had an open slot on the podcast, and I was sitting back and I was thinking, who could I invite on the podcast that's someone I really respect, enjoy being around, and I think could bring a great message? Well, he's here today, Greg Solomon. Greg, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Good to be here, Jeff.
One of the most gracious guys I know. So here you are.
Here I am.
I call him up short notice and as typical, yeah, I can move things around and make it happen. So I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me.
So Greg is the president of Oxygen Business Capital, a company that helps businesses expand faster and with greater ease by providing the working capital they need to thrive. When traditional bank financing falls short, especially for fast-growing companies, Greg and his team step in with solutions that fuel success. I've had the privilege of getting to know Greg over the last few years, and he's not just a financial expert. He's a lender with a heart. For him, it's not just about the numbers. It's about standing alongside business leaders and entrepreneurs, helping them navigate the challenges and turn their biggest dreams into reality, even in the tough times. Get ready to have some insightful and inspiring conversation here today. How's that sound to you?
Oh, well, sounds good to me.
Well, let's just jump into it.
Okay.
How the heck did you get into this, Greg? What's the backstory?
You know, Jeff, sometimes things are just meant to be, I think. And really, I went to college at Fresno State and interviewed for a job that eventually I got right out of college. They came on campus and it put me into this world. So
what were you studying in college? Actually, remotely different or?
No, you know, a lot of times you would say that, but it was a business major. Focus was emphasis on management. And then I had a communications minor.
So, reasonably aligned with.
Yeah, it was aligned. And I got hired into what they called an accelerated management program. And I got to kind of move around a little bit, California, take over various offices that were in the community, serving different parts of, you know, like as example, my first one, it was really rough, but I had to go to San Luis Obispo and that had an office back in the days, more brick and mortar and you'd be in the community. And so you did a number of things. You did business financing, you did real estate financing, did some consumer lending, and then you did some merchant lending, like the 90 days, same as cash, those types of programs. And so it was fun, you know, but really literally got recruited into it from Fresno State and really haven't left that world ever since.
It worked out.
It worked out so far.
You know, a lot of people have multiple careers. I know mine's evolved some over the years.
Yeah, but a lot of people have evolved. Yeah. It's been shocking that I have been able to stay in it. And, you know, it's taken some twists and turns. And, you know, I went from kind of white collar, you know, manager to now owner. And that in itself is certainly a different twist and turn. And, you know, as you can relate to owning your own business.
Yes. Yes. What led to that transition?
I think a variety of things you see out in the world when you're in part of it. And I got brought to San Diego for a company that ultimately pulled me from that world of kind of the corporate finance just into more of the mortgage finance, that whole subprime boom that went boom bust.
You got to play in that space
I did.
For a while.
I did.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, you know, it worked out great for a while until it completely went away.
Ba-doom.
Yeah. Boom, bust. And so in it, you know, you kind of, as you're going through it and being a corporate guy and publicly traded company at the time and all the various things, you think to yourself, again, the money was good, but am I really satisfied? Is this what I want to do the rest of my life? And I think, you know, luckily, a fate or intervention, you know, when the companies went away, I had time to think because I didn't really have anything going on for a while. I thought I kind of was trying to make something of it, but it, you know, ultimately I kind of went back to what my roots were with business lending, really non-prime business lending and, or, you know, kind of as most people know it now, non-bank lending. So private investors, private capital. And really what the idea was I could control my fate versus somebody else control it for me, right?
Because you kind of learn that in the corporate life that it's not you or really you, right?
It's not.
They tell you that they got you, but you find out all of a sudden like, nope, we don't have you at all, right? It's time for someone to go. Guess what? Thanks, Greg.
That's right. Yeah. And I, you know,
As a government workers right now.
Right. There you go.
They had the most secure job in the world. And all of a sudden,
until they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, as a guy, an aging white male, it doesn't play well, you know, in the world these days either as good. So, yeah, you know.
We got that going for us.
Yeah.
Old white guys.
Yeah. I know.
No one's looking for us.
No, they aren't.
We got to go out and make it on our own here.
And you're absolutely right. You got to make it happen on your own. So, a combination of things led me back into this. And then I got to work for some good companies in this more specific business only lending, right? Versus, again, my career was started with doing a lot of different things, went to just mortgages for a while. And then I came back to, you know, just the business lending.
Why are you drawn to the business lending side? What about that? That's,
you know, something that you'll probably relate to that I really found satisfying is during my original corporate career, thousands of employees, and you go to functions and everything was incestuous in the sense that you just went to your own events, right? You hosted your own parties, you did your own things. And once in a while you went to a trade show or whatever, but nothing was in the community. It was all about the company. It was all about, you know, which made sense at a corporation, propping that up. And about, I don't know, 20 years ago now, I probably got my first taste of getting into the community itself. And, you know, as I'm talking to bankers and understanding what some of the needs are in the community, there's always been this gap in terms of, you know, if you're not bank lending, what are you, right? And a lot of these entrepreneurs don't have a lot of options that they understand. Now, there's saying that there's more money chasing money than I've ever been in my life. And some of it's not healthy money. It's online lending and people that call you that really the interest rates are really, really just make it difficult to survive as an entrepreneur. But, you know, what led me into this was the fact that I could be in the community. I could meet guys like you and I could meet other people. And everybody that I try to be around does have a heart for the right purposes. You know, I've kind of surrounded myself with that. But
that's what I love about you.
Well, and you.
Now you're a classic banker.
Yeah. And I think just doing your part, feeling good about what you're doing, you know, is so critical. And I think more people are relating to that, not just, you know, helping an entrepreneur, but, you know, given COVID and what has happened and how it's influenced America. And, you know, I think some of that just, you know, it feels good to be able to do something good, right? And your little piece, your little niche, your whatever it is, when you facilitate for, right, you're bringing people together and you're making good things happen because you're leading them. And mine, it's, you know, people that generally can't go to a bank. And again, they're so good at their craft, whatever that may be. You had one of my clients on, Bob, right?
Yeah, Bob Dalton, yeah.
Yeah. And he's a client. And, you know, Bob didn't have a lot of options. He did a lot of amazing things to make them, create them. But the banks say no, who says yes? And so you got to be careful of who your partners are, like anything in life, in marriage, right? You know, and in money, you got to be careful. And so, you know, drawn to the fact that I can help people in my community more than just, you know, kind of be an online lender. And I should kind of start by saying, when I came back into this, we were a national lender. Mm. As part of a corporate business-only national lending platform. So we lent everywhere across the United States. And it just wasn't as gratifying as it was when I kind of went from that to what I'm doing at Oxygen Business Capital now, which is literally within the Southern California community, we have about 75% of our clients.
Love that. This podcast is all about San Diego. So yeah. So maybe explain a little bit more about Oxygen Business Capital. I love the name because my interpretation of this is you got like a Bob Dalton who's got some good product trying to do a good thing. And traditional banks are like going, oh, your numbers don't line up in the way, your risk profile is too high, whatever it may be. You don't have the right collateral. Certain things aren't lining up that checks the boxes for corporate, right? Corporate
nailed
banks.
It.
And so where do you turn? So that's what you guys do. So maybe give us a little more insight on that. What does that look like? And what's the typical guys that you're talking to? And maybe even a story.
Yeah, no, there's lots of stories, but it comes in different ways and in waves and how it's being done. But we work with like a local bank, say Endeavor, right? And we boarded one of their clients that in the way that the client became unprofitable and didn't fit the bank. So, you know, they sent them to us. To
so the bank actually sends... Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize it worked that way.
Yeah, right. It can, right? It There's can. Different avenues of, like you say. And so our job then is to, you know, help this client who's in San Diego here, doing a really good job, kind of in a slightly construction-esque element, which is tough risk-wise. And our job is to get them back to Endeavor, you know, within a couple of years. And so it's not just the capital, it's the advice, right? It's who can help these people, these entrepreneurs that go, you know, 500 miles an hour in sales and building revenue, but sometimes don't bring along the right people for their finances,
right,
or for their marketing.
Cash flow problems.
That's right, for their leadership. And so thus the idea for us, you know, Oxygen Business Capital is built on the idea of capital and advice to get bankable. The advice is not our own, generally speaking. It's yours, right? In leadership facilitating. It could be, you know, we've used outsourced companies like Optima, you know, or other people in the community here.
That, so making connections for people.
That's right.
So at some level, almost like a VC, right? When a VC comes in and says, we're going to give you some money, but we're also here to provide some expertise and some support.
Right? Yeah, I guess you're right. You could say that.
But a lot of companies are further down the path.
And that's right. They're usually bigger. And so in our world, the companies are generally smaller in revenues and we're not taking any equity. We're doing debt financing.
Okay.
And so an example of a client that probably wouldn't mind me mentioning his name that we're working with right now is called Aria Commercial Cleaning. And they're locally here. And basically, it was a guy that built himself up, an immigrant, came, was a janitor, went all the way from janitor to owning a company and a lot of various obstacles along the way there. And, you know, through that, the growth happens. And how do you handle the growth? And sometimes you can get a bank line. And in this case, he actually did. And we went behind the bank line to give him actual working capital that for some of the growth, because the bank line was limited. Mm. So the idea of our programs is flexibility, not just in how we design them, generally speaking, with accounts receivable or with inventory or with equipment or real estate, even.
The banks wouldn't do that.
Right. Because A, they're not profitable enough to get it at the time, expansion, and B, so we might start out in his case with a, you know, call it a $200,000 line. And if we see things are going well and he's adding more clients, we might go to 400,000. So that's the flexibility that you, you know, involve in terms of your team, their growth, and how you put it together that I'd say the most clients appreciate. In this case, his name is Ignacio. And Ignacio is, you know, had a stumble along the way, which is he was doing all the cleaning for 99-cent stores. And they decided, you know, about 6 months ago to close up, too much competition in that niche. So they closed up and they couldn't pay him for a long time. Like as in he still hasn't gotten paid, even though they say they would. So he has a big bundle of money that's not getting paid, but he still has to pay his, you know, all his staffing. He has the expenses and how do you do it? So we had to devise a program that not only worked with his accounts receivable, but also gave him flexibility to get through that 99-cent store issue of not being paid, you know, and we really appreciated his, call it his honesty, his transparency with us. Not everybody's like that.
Right, right.
And so, you know, as of today, we've mostly got him through that workout. 99-cent store hasn't paid, but they expect to. And when it does, it'll be found money that will certainly help him a lot, but it's an example of somebody that we probably had weekly or every other week conversations about what else do you need and bringing in payroll companies to look at to maybe help them with costs and, you know, giving them people as the CFOs to maybe see if that outsourcing, not again, non-payroll, that's, you know, and those types of folks that can help him get to that next destination. And he's a guy that, you know, believes he's going to take the world of commercial cleaning on, right? And he'll be, you know, $100 million company at some point, right?
Right. You'll be part of that story.
Yeah.
So obviously I have to assume that your money costs a little bit more money than the bank money.
Absolutely.
Right. Because you're taking a higher risk. So where does money come from for a company like yours?
So generally speaking, there's two main avenues. And my world, if you really get into it, is defined as asset-based lending, ABL. And ABL means a lot of different things to different people, but just means that we're going to offset our risk through some asset classification of accounts receivable or inventory or an asset that a company has that maybe typically banks don't want to utilize as much, especially at the profit level that some of my companies are, which is break even, maybe even a little loss, but we're always trying to look at their tomorrow versus their yesterday.
The potential. Yeah,
absolutely. Really is about the potential. And so we got the money in this particular example from two different routes, a bank. We've got banks that kind of court us in our industry, which is certainly a niche, and then from investors. So
the banks are looking at ways to put money into,
that's right,
into work, right? So yeah.
Certain banks, everybody likes, right, to provide credit lines to asset-based lenders, but there are absolutely are some that do a great job at that. And then combine that with some investor capital that's more flexible. So an example,
it's almost like you have a fund of sorts.
Yeah, we do. We have a couple funds. One that we would say we're the bankable clients for the credit line we have, because the bank's restrictions are still going to be a little tighter. When you go to the investor side, where say Aria and Ignacio fit, it was because we could have a lot of flexibility and forgiveness to not get paid on time, because we have investors. As long as we pay them a certain amount every month, we can kind of accept the fact that we're not getting our full payment or whatnot, and that we'll resolve it. They trust us to resolve that we are going to get all the money at some point. So, you know, that's generally speaking, the main capital that exists in our world. And investors is less frequent than the banks. Most people like the bank line. It's a little cheaper, and you kind of understand how it works once you get into it.
So kind of like one of the things that's interesting about your business model is success actually means you lose business, right? I mean, basically you come in, you're trying to be a stopgap in some sort of period of this company's history and get them to the next level. When they get to the next level, essentially they're going to go back to the banks or that's wherever, right? And so good job, Greg. Hopefully you don't have to ever see you again kind of thing, right? So.
It is. It's kind of true. Yeah. We do find, and it is exciting. Honestly, I don't know if I could have said the same thing in my 20s about losing clients. Like, I might have felt like it hurt more. I actually do really like it when it happens now. It's a reason for us to celebrate somebody accomplished that next level. And to be honest, in commercial finances, which is what I am, right? In commercial finance, banks are really still the best deal going. They are the lowest rates, and the way they function, it works the best for companies. And
right.
So
if you can bank, do it that way, right? Why would you
can, right?
Way?
So that's, if I can graduate somebody back to a bank, I think it's exciting. And really when you're in the community that I serve, like San Diego, you know, there's a lot of opportunities here. So it's not, you wave goodbye. And obviously the other side of it, like you said, is, well, you know, we got to replace that, or, you know, we're going to have a revenue shortfall possibly, right? Because I'm a small business owner, similar to my clients. I'm not, right. You know, some guy with
you
millions
similar,
of own...
similar problems.
Yeah, I do. Right. I do.
Who's consulting with you, Greg?
Yeah. Maybe it's going to have to be you, Jeff.
There you go. You know, I keep saying I'm going to come over. I want to talk to your team, but
that's right.
You won't let me in. Come on. What's going on?
I know. I guess this is a good way to do that.
Forcing the issue here today.
That's right.
Well, one of the things I always enjoy being around you is kind of these heartfelt stories you always have where, okay, you got some guidelines, you have some rules that, you know, your business is saying, okay, here's what, you know, your partners are involved. But then Greg sometimes goes, well, I just really care about this guy and I believe in this guy, and you're willing to put more skin in the game and take some more risk. Got a story for us where hopefully a positive story where that came across for you and you said, man, I just got to go do this. I believe in this guy. I believe in this story. And
yeah, I think that story was, you know, I got several of them. I don't know if I should mention Bob, but Bob at Sackcloth and Ashes has had a special place in my heart. It's not been an easy story for Bob and his journey at all, but, you know, serving the homeless and, you know, how close it was to his heart.
In fact, I just got a whole load of his blankets delivered to my house here just the other day, right? For my wife's nonprofit.
Right.
So for the homeless. Does amazing work. Yep.
Yeah. His website is fantastic. His heart's in the right place and he's got a lot of financial things to figure out right now. It's a tough, tough road for him, but he is a guy that we've done things that we probably haven't done for very many other people in terms of different types of credit facilities to help him along his journey. And, you know, that journey is, you know, Bob's willing to get there, get his laptop open. He's got so much enthusiasm and passion that kind of wins you over. And it's right here in my community. So it feels better. It's a little easier to watch. Doesn't mean it's any less difficult, you know, in terms of how things are going for him. And sometimes months are great. Others are not so good. And there's months where, Greg, we got to talk about how I'm going to get you paid if I can. And, you know, that's not what, and for any of my investors listening, that's not probably good for them, but it is for us in terms of we put our own money in to a certain level to, you know, make sure what between my partner and I, you know, what we're doing in order to make sure our investors are covered, make sure the bank's covered. Those are the priorities. If you lose them, then you don't have a business, right? You know, and the idea of Sackcloth is he absolutely believes, you know, that's going to be a business that is of major U.S. impact, not just a small, you know, local impact. You know, we have another example.
He is doing things across the country, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Sure. I mean, his product's made in Italy.
It's a great story. It's a great show. It's even on video.
Yeah.
We did a video of that.
It is. Yeah. It's stored in Oregon, you know, and shipped from Oregon and goes all over the place. So yeah, that's an example of somebody that I got close to, you know, to your point of having a heart. The financials didn't line up really all to make a decision, but we made it on character. And that is part of, you know, in my world, call it lending and banking. There's a thing called the 3 C's, the 4 C's, the 5 C's. which all of us, especially old school, lend on, which one of it's collateral, right? So any bank wants collateral.
Of course.
The other,
my way out in case things go wrong.
That's right. Right. Yep. Absolutely. And we're concerned about that too. That's the asset, you know, we're trying to figure out. The other part of it is character. That's one of those things you have to look at is, you know, what's a man's value? Do you believe when something really bad happens, he'll still pay you? Because I got horror stories where people decided, no, I'm not going to pay you, Greg. You help me, but I'm not going to pay you. And I understand you're going to have to take a loss. You're a big boy. Take your loss. I'm out. So over the years, right, as we go along our path, we learn more about people. We sometimes, you know, take chances. Sometimes it works out. Most of the time works out. Sometimes it doesn't. But character is part of that. Credit is one of those things, right, that, you know, banks would say, hey, you got to have a certain credit score, right? Your FICO, 680, 700. In my world, that's not really as much of a concern. We're looking at capacity is the other one. So the kind of four C's, capacity is, where are you going? You know, are you able to, is this something that, you know, can go from $1 million a year to 5 million? And if so, how are you doing it? How are you going to get there? Right. And so those are the, you know, of the things I'm looking at, character, collateral, capacity, you know, are the things that I'm focusing on more to be able to, you know, take the certain risks that I believe are worth it. You know, lots of examples of, unfortunately, corporate America, even on accounts receivable, doesn't pay timely. So one that you might know, Home Depot, pays in 60 days plus. Anybody, everybody. So if you sell, you got to be prepared.
Sit for a long time without getting paid.
But you got payroll.
You paid everything else out.
Yeah. You got suppliers, right? You got insurance costs. You got all these things. You got to wait 60 days to pay. Now, at some point in your evolution, all that catches up in terms of profitability. But depends on if you just had your first order to Home Depot or to Walmart or to whomever.
It's a big hole.
There's a big hole.
Yeah.
And how do you fill it? And that's where
you guys come in.
Come in. Yeah. In different ways. And like I said, we see lots of different, you know, examples of in construction. Another one that's not my favorite to do, but just got a referral from my old company I used to be an owner of years ago for a company that is getting stiffed by a contractor for a couple different reasons. They're building something for them. And basically, contractor saying, you know, we've got some issues. We can't pay you for a while. Well, one client could derail the whole company. And so then the idea is, how do we leverage other assets in that company and try to
keep them afloat?
There you go. Keep them afloat. Live to fight a better day.
So you see a lot of businesses. You're in there. You're under the hood now. You've put some investment in. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges that these business leaders, these guys trying to grow these businesses, what do you see? If you were to say, here's the top three things that people get in trouble with, what would they be from your perspective?
Yeah, it encompasses a lot of what I do, but cash flow is one. That
in line with what you just described. That
yeah,
you get and, over your and skis. How,
right, yeah. That really kind of in line with the cash flow is the fact that they haven't prepared for it with the right personnel. So an outsourced company like Optima or whomever may, you know, get in there to help them with their books, right? And so they don't have the right projections. So they didn't understand when they just won this contract that, whoop, we don't have the money to pay for it. So cash flow.
You go from very excited to like, oh, we're broke. What's going on over here?
Yeah. Right? No, I see people that win these contracts all the time that aren't sure how they're going to pay for them. And another part of my, and I'll come back to the other couple, but another part of my world that we kind of coin need and speed. Because in my world, somebody comes in and says, guess what? I just won this job and I need 5 employees to start and I can't have the deliverable for 30 days. And oh, by the way, I need the money yesterday. So we have to be ready. My team, my staff has to be ready for these things that could pop up and be a priority that somebody needs money in a week or two.
So you can go way faster than a traditional bank.
Yeah. Yes. That's again, having that capital being, you know, active for us. So between the investors and banks and being able to respond and have the staff that understands this is very important, right? This isn't something that we can wait. And sometimes if you're on vacation, you might have to help us or because somebody's got just a very, very pressing need. And so cash flow is probably by far the number one thing that holds the entrepreneurs back. I would say, you know, within that is the proper staffing period of their teams. A lot of times they started with family and friends.
Right. My wife's my accountant or whatever.
Yeah.
My CFO.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hear you.
And so it's not the right people, the right butts in the right seats, as you know, people would say. And so you get the wrong people in there and they're maybe over their skis, so to speak, in terms of when they do the job. But the owner is generally speaking, for me, the main salesperson, right? It's the idea generator, the person has all that passion to go out there and make things happen. And then the team fills in the rest, right? And so they might be good at looking at the owner at a couple things over here, but you know, they take maybe somebody that's cheaper just because that's what they think is important to them versus more quality.
Right.
You know, and then really—
So people at the end of the day is always so critical.
Yeah. So you get your cash flow, which is by far number one. You got the right people in the right seats. And then it's really having the right technology to support this, mm-hmm. as in software. And, you know, even I would say related in terms of programs that support everything in one place. So even having QuickBooks, sometimes they don't, you know, that's kind of the go-to in my world. But if they don't have that, they were tracking manually and that gets them off track. So having the right, I mean, it's probably a lot of things, cash flow people and systems to support what they're doing.
Love it. Yeah.
It's like old school, right? And things that don't change. I mean, it's kind of—
No big surprises.
Yeah. I mean, no doubt, you know, in that is— All that is having the right leadership. And sometimes the owner is not the best leader. Won't probably shock you at all. You've been in companies to help them facilitate and whatnot. And
it's tough to be everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, you know, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
To be like this great leader, this technologist, this a financial, right? I mean, who has all that?
Right.
If you had all that, you know, we wouldn't be talking to them anyways, right?
That's right.
Maybe, you know, they'd be in some other space, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't exist out there. I mean, often when I'm talking to people here in the podcast, you know, there's always the partner story, right? There's always that other person that really was the two different personalities, the two different skill sets that came together to make something happen, you know? So,
yeah.
So critical.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that throw my small business owners off, you know, and the idea is having the resources to continually, so we service them. So, you know, there's brokers out there, right? Where send them to a lender and that's fine, but we are the direct lender. And so, once we have them, we service them. So again, I stay with it. I'm still there. My team usually takes over most everything afterwards, but I'm still there to be involved. And as an example, tomorrow I'm heading to Mexico to go visit a client that is a metal fabricator. And we're going to talk about, you know, local issues, tariffs, right?
Yeah.
All right. That's very much a reality. And how are they going to handle, they moved it to Mexico a few years ago and now they got tariffs. Now, they believe they're going to be okay, but they're navigating, you know, uncertain political waters that affect them. And then how does that going to affect, you know, their clients? So always things coming up.
That's the thing I want to ask you. I mean, this is kind of a heartbeat kind of question. So it's March 5th, 2025 here, right? We're in this new sort of environment. The president gave a big speech last night. We're putting tariffs on all our friends and enemies, right? Inflation's kind of going crazy. Stock market, at least yesterday, took a big dump on what I was doing today.
Down a little bit today, too.
Yeah. So some crazy things are going. And interestingly enough, earlier in the year, I remember seeing some Vistage report, like CEOs are very optimistic about 2025. It's going to be a great year and all this. You're out here living this, right? I mean, you're talking to business leaders day in, day out, small business leaders.
Yeah.
What do you know, Greg? What's happening here?
I would say, you know, in January, I was kind of on a pause, like, let's see what happens here. And things are generally a little slower in my world in January. And I wasn't sure. I actually was a little bit more uncertain and maybe a little bit pessimistic. And really, the last several years, I've been optimistic in terms of where things were going. And a lot of it has to do with availability of capital and availability of resources, you know, because there's, you know, millions of entrepreneurs with ideas.
Right.
And it could be somebody, you know, in a restaurant world, which is not my world. My world is more business to business related or direct to consumer, you know, revenue is a little higher, but it's not restaurants. But you got so many entrepreneurs that always are looking to get, you know, capital. And then you got certain political headwaters that, you know, everybody has to face from time to time. I actually, kind of with your intro of the marketplace, change, you know, of control in the White House. At this moment, like you said, early March, I'm actually more optimistic now than I was earlier than the year. I think there's good opportunities in my world, again, for things to get done. As long as consumer confidence doesn't slip much more, which—
Right, that's been a little downward slide lately.
Yeah, right. And if the American public is still buying and still feels comfortable, they got dollars to spend, than a lot of these ideas of, you know, that I, folks that I'm doing. I've, you know, got companies that do golf industry. I got a company that does candy for most of these, you know, convenience stores, right? That you buy so quick
luxury items at some level.
Yeah. Right. Right. Kind of. Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it's freeze dried candy. So it was something I didn't even know until we funded them a year ago, but
the other part of it, right?
A new niche.
What do you learn?
Yeah. Freeze dried candy. But there's, you know, you heard about the cleaners, and I've got staffing companies, and the staffing companies would say they're down, as in they're not staffing as many people. And that's kind of a good place. A good check is
a good indicator, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How are they doing? And they'd say we're down. We're not as optimistic. We think it'll be an okay year. You got freight companies logistically that had their best years in COVID and have actually fallen way off over the last couple of years. And that's coming back finally a little bit. So you got a couple things out there that aren't great, but they're not bad. Like there's not a sector that in my world that construction, you know, slightly is doing fine. There's ability to build more.
Heaven knows we need to build some houses.
Yeah, that's right.
For some, for all our homeless folks and for me.
Yeah, for you. Yeah. Yeah, North County's doing a pretty good job, especially like Escondido. But bottom line, I feel pretty good about things. Yeah, I do feel
good
that it's going the right direction, that there'll be, you know, ability for a lot of these people to, you know, accomplish their goals through companies like myself and, you know, leaders like you that can help navigate them. So
you and I don't know how we met. I know we're in a group together, our guys gathering that we do down the bay and all that kinds of good stuff. And that's kind of how I've gotten to know you. And one of the things I appreciate about you is just, you seem to be a fantastic networker. I mean, you have a lot of fun. You ride your motorcycle. I was at, what was it, the lacrosse event, and you show up, you know, had a buddy because he rode a bike and just lots of fun things you do. What's your advice on how do you become a good networker here in San Diego?
Yeah.
What's been the trick?
I think I'm going to have to follow your lead, Jeff. You've done a great job too. I think really it's being authentic. You know, I think it's being yourself. And it's really being, having good empathy to understand somebody else's situation. That's probably the key. You and I have talked about a couple of individuals that talk too much about themselves, right? In our groups and whatnot. And, you know, I think if you have a good ear to understand somebody else's situation and what they're looking for, and you're authentic with them, you know, and trying to say, hey, look, this is what I think I can do. This is how I can help. This is how I can be of value. Whether I'm dealing with a banker that, you know, has a client that they might have to let go for a little bit because they didn't meet the covenants. Or I work with the SBDC and SCORE and, you know, some of the groups, and they're kind of taking that brand new entrepreneur, you know, and they call you, and there's a trust factor between all of us, you know, in the community. Like, is this guy doing what he said he would do? And is he a good guy? Do I like him? You know, would I send business to him? And whatever our sector is, right? And I think being a good networker is A, having those qualities and then showing up. A lot of times people come to these things and even our gathering and they flake out, right? And it's a commitment. It's not a commitment. I think people get self-absorbed and, well, if I show up today, is there a lead for me? Why not show up and say, how can I help somebody else, right? Why do we get so self-absorbed? We think it's about us. It's not worth it today to drive to this event. It's not worth it to participate. So I think being a good networker is being present, is being authentic, is really having some empathy to understand how do you help and being present, you know, being involved. And it's not easy because it can take a lot of time like yours, right? Some of the things you do take a lot of time. There's not always a great return on those. You know, maybe that return is just in how you feel, putting your head on the pillow at the end of the day.
Exactly, right. I thought we did a fun thing. What was it, 2 months ago when we got together with our little guys gathering thing and I facilitated an ask give exercise. I thought that was interesting to see how people sort of struggled at some level to go, well, I know what I want, but what do you want to give? You know, it's like, what do you have to offer the group? You know? So yeah, it's very interesting.
You know, I think on that topic, it's interesting. Like, again, we all get a little bit of wisdom as we go down our path. Right. And I think, you know, in my 20s, I felt like, you know, I just wanted to take whatever I could, you know, get a good corporate job and somebody need money. Great. I'll take it. I'll do it. I'll help, you know? And the idea was, you know, how well am I doing because of this? Right. And I think you get to luckily, if you're fortunate, a lot of us in our lives, and you get to a point where, you know, by just giving, you actually get, you know, I mean, there's various things about that give to get. And I've found for me, there's a lot of truth in that. You know, if I give, it's like, I don't know if it gets a little weird, existential, good karma or, you know, whatnot. But I think if people see you have a good soul, you're trying, you know, then it kind of comes back to you. You know, you give something and then you get something in return.
Yeah. The key to that is you just can't So I'm giving this anticipating getting something because
nailed it.
I'm doing my little Hindu study. It's like, it may come in the next life, by the way.
That's right.
Might not even show up in this lifetime. So
yeah,
it puts a whole new twist on it, right?
It does.
Yeah. You know, what's your heart? Why are you giving, right?
Yeah.
You're giving because it's the right thing to do. It makes you feel good to give, or it's like, no, I have some big expectation. I should get this back in return.
Yeah. And it's certainly getting us off topic, but just, you might have the most money wherever you are. It doesn't mean you're the happiest, right?
I mean, well, that's a proven fact that money is not the,
that's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all would like to make more money. That's part of being a businessman, right? But how you get there, how you feel about it. And maybe if you never get there, but you're doing the right things along the way, you know, and
creating the journey, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be about the journey. We get all caught up in trying to get somewhere, but it's certainly about what's happening right here, right now, in this moment.
Yeah.
Right?
And what
that's
we learned.
Why I got you on the show because I wanted to be hanging out with you, Greg.
So, Jeff, it's a pleasure hanging out. And what we learn right on that journey is it's not an easy path at all. And sometimes, you know, the things we want or we desire, we're not going to get those in terms of physical riches that we thought maybe when we were 25, like this is where we'd be.
Right.
So that journey, you have to feel comfortable about, here I am. This is what I'm doing. I have value to the community I serve. I have value in my family, to those who are following me and watching me. I have value to, you know, what I do. And yes, hopefully I'm going to make some good money from this, but maybe I just make enough to pay my bills and, you know, get out there the next day and do it again.
Do it again. But also, who you end this journey with, right?
Yeah. So again, the community. Go back,
back to
what makes
community.
You want to go back in the community.
Yeah, yeah, right. Makes all the difference. Well, believe it or not, we got to wrap this thing up.
Wow. All right.
So I always like to end with, what's the big idea? Like, the one thing you want people to remember?
I think, you know, in my world, right, it's certainly for the entrepreneur that, you know, is listening to this, it's certainly all about surrounding yourself with the right people, the right talent, you know, on your team. And part of that is having a finance person. Part of that is having, you know, a good community person that helps you and a good leadership. But I think it's, the money will come if you have the right people around you. And I think too many people, again, think it's about themselves. They isolate themselves, think they've got to solve everything. And no, you really need people you can talk to, people that can help you on that journey. And then, you know, have the faith to, you know, put it out there and to ask, I need help with this. I need help with that. And
ask and then let go.
Yeah. Two people are too strong about it.
Yeah.
And then
I ask, but I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And there's so many resources out there, right? So many things to help each other, how I can help you, how you can help me. But you got to ask, you got to make sure you're intentional about what you're doing. And I think in this day and age, more people are ever, you know, about what are you doing, you know, and why are you doing it? Not just that you're doing it, but why? And we have choices. Do we want to be a part of it or not? Versus 20 years ago, you did whatever you did, you know, or 30 years ago, and it was fine. No, there's some choices to be made. And do I want to be a part of this? Do I support it or not?
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
A little short notice and all that kinds of good stuff. But like I said, this in the beginning of the podcast, I'm thinking, who could I give a call to that I want to hang out with here this afternoon? That was you.
Yeah. Well, I like hanging out with you, and it's a win-win.
Anytime you're in the room, it's always better. So I appreciate you and all the great work you're doing, and just love your gracious heart and who you are, man.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah. Win-win, right?
Well, that's our show for the day. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego, who are all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, where we're all counting on you.